The following program, Chicago's Weekend Wake-Up Call, is sponsored by the Digital Wellness Center and, to the extent applicable, their guests. The views and opinions expressed therein do not necessarily reflect those of NewsWeb Radio Company or its management.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to Digital Wellness with Dr. Mary, and I am Dr. Mary. And today we're delving into the fascinating world of Gen Z, what I've dubbed the certainty generation. Joining us this morning are Monica McLeod and Corey Toth. Monica is a very dedicated teacher. Some of you may remember Auntie Monica from one of our earlier shows, and we've invited her back to talk about her experience teaching Gen Zs and what are some great guardrails for Gen Z. And next we have my friend Corey Toth. Corey and I just reconnected, and she's one of the reasons we're talking about Gen Z today. She asked me some really poignant questions about Gen Z, and she's a mom who's navigating the challenges of raising a young Gen Z after COVID. And of course, all of you know, Richard Cinemardi, our associate producer and proud cusper Gen Z millennial. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Corey, can we hear? Oh, there we hear everybody. And today, our whole goal is to begin to explore the unique traits and behaviors of Gen Z, as really not a lot of people understand who and what they're dealing with, and more importantly, why. And last but not least, I'm really excited to delve into how we believe they're going to shape our world. Richardson, over to you.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here again, and I would love our listeners to also join this great conversation that we're going to have. You can text or call us at 773-763-9278.
Now let's jump right into it. A lot of people actually read my column on LinkedIn, which I think I should probably repost, on Gen Z. And one of the things that I talked about, we already have 10 questions for this morning's show, just based on that column. And one of the things I talked about was I dubbed them the certainty generation. Their whole upbringing is marked by, obviously, digital innovation because they're born between 2000 and 2020. Lots of digital innovation there. But also global instability, economic instability, and local instability. And so certainty is something that they crave. And certainty is defined by guardrails, letting them know what is going to get them to from point A to point B. And it's really beginning to shape a unique consumer behavior. So I want to talk a little bit about, and Monica and Corey, just jump in. I'm talking a little bit here about the neuroscience of it all. If you think about it, your mammalian brain, which is just over your ears, is where patterns are developed. And in my book, Message Received, I introduced what is called generational anchoring benchmarks. And Gen Z, one of their benchmarks, one of the things that frames how their mammalian brain or their gut makes decisions, is that they have been systematically trained since kindergarten to respond to crisis. So, for example, in kindergarten, they were taught to hide in lockdown because a bad man will come into the school and kill you. And then look what happened in 2003, 2004, 2005, all of these years subsequently. Most of these children, an incredible number of people under 24 now, have been exposed to some sort of violence. They also understand this idea of global pandemics now, of not socializing in person. Imagine what we've said to a whole global audience of young people. Oh, by the way, don't go near another human being or you could die. So what does that do? That drives them to digital communication. And that's a totally different form of communication because there's no tone, there's no social cues, there's no body language. And what we do is when we do that to people, we instill a profound need for certainty. As social scientists, we've never seen this more than we did with the Great Depression, which began with the Depression, World War I, all the things that came after it. And we know what that generation was like. Now, layer on the fact that this was a global pandemic and we weren't allowed to touch people. We weren't allowed to interact with people. And so one of the things that we need to start talking about and discussing is how do we bring them along into a face-to-face communication world? Because we're coming back to that, whether it's a video call, whether it's texting with a professor or a teacher. And Monica, this is one of the reasons we all wanted you back, is because you're a teacher that understands the value of guardrails. You are not part of, there's a whole new movement out there called gentle parenting, and it's not proving to go well. And so one of the things I'd like to talk about is why it's mixing up children who need certainty so much. And so what we'd like to talk about as well is Corey brought up some really interesting interactions that she's had with her daughter as her daughter's starting to look for a job. And last but not least, Richardson and I are going to talk about brand interactions, like how millennials changed brand interactions. Gen Z is dramatically going to change interactions. So the first thing I want to put out there during segment one is the short attention span. And let's talk about that, because a lot of Gen Zers are getting a bad rep for their short attention span. But again, I'd like to go back to the neuroscience of it, is when you plant corn, you get corn. We brought up Gen Z on digital. As parents, we gave them laptops or iPads or even Blackberries back in the day to play with so that we could interact with each other. And if you even look at YouTube, when YouTube started, it was a 7-minute video, and now it's gone all the way down to 3-minute videos. Gen Z has an 8-second attention span. Boomers, a 13-second attention span. Gen X, which is my generation, 10. I think Monica and Corey, you're both Gen X too. And millennials, 12. How do you think that short attention span is affecting children? So I'm putting that out there for everyone and for young adults.
Yeah, Mary, I think that the Gen Z is so accustomed to instant information, right? Instant entertainment. And so their short attention span is because of that, right? So with the digital communication that they have, they can decide within seconds if they're interested or not. And they're accustomed to that, right? That's how they've been brought up. So I think some of the keys with dealing with that, right, is to make sure that our kids are engaged and asking ourselves what are the best ways to do that and keep them engaged.
And also how to keep them engaged physically. Like if you think about, there's a whole new movement in the medical world and the world of psychology and psychiatry. And it's called the whole person thought. It was first introduced, believe it or not, in the 1960s in terms of education. But what we've developed it as is think about the world, your soul, as three parts of a Venn diagram. Your physical self, your emotional self, and your spiritual self. And your spiritual self isn't about your belief in God. It can be. But it's also about your goals, your attitudes, your beliefs. And when those three circles aren't equal, when they're out of line, your mental wellness, which is the intersection of all three, is out of whack. And so what we really begin to look at is how do we get them all back in whack? And we have a little test that people can take to see where they are and see different micro breaks they can take to help them get in line. It takes less than 3 minutes to get your circles in line, by the way, but you have to practice it over and over again. So when you say help keep them busy, it's give them directions for physical activity, goal setting, and then emotional check-ins, like having actual conversations. Monica, what are your thoughts? Oh, I think you're on mute.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Is it okay if I could jump in?
You go ahead and jump in. We'll get Monica in a sec. Thanks, Rich.
Yeah. So ever since I was growing up, I'm just seeing like the correlation with all the technology that has been coming out. Everything has been getting faster and faster and faster. And when you look back, you realize, oh my goodness, my old phone used to be that slow. But when you look at it, it was pretty fast. So now when something is like a second slower, I get very impatient. I'm like, oh, I want this information quickly. And that kind of deals with everything else. Like, I want not only the information I'm seeking, I want the responses I want. I'm seeking also quicker. I want everything quickly. That also can cause like so many anxieties, and that's something that you see around, even in my school, even in school. Like,
really? Because you're in finals now, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, for example, I got a test done, and I'm always asking, okay, when is the grade coming up? It's not instant, so everyone is asking when is the grade coming out. You, like, literally, right after we finish, people want. They want to get their grades. They want everything quickly, and it can cause a lot of frustration, can cause a lot of tension. And so as you see as you see Gen Zs and in our generation, you get to see that we want all these informations quickly. We are so accustomed to our technology giving us that information so quickly that we seek it now. It's a normal thing now.
You know, I always love hearing that, because when I'm teaching undergraduates, and I only do it once a year, I'm not in the classroom at all the time. And I want to talk to Monica about this. With millennials, we found... Oh, I can hear that with the echo.
Yep, I
go ahead, Monica, jump in.
Yeah. So what I was going to say is, we literally this week we were told as a staff that teachers are not that I've been doing this, but a lot of teachers have been having programs running on their screens in their classroom during the lunch breaks for their students. The reason being is it's their students are occupied by watching the screen, whatever they're playing, then, you know, they're less likely to be moving around or possibly having any kind of conflicts during the break times. And we were literally just told that that's no longer allowed, that because we are wanting to encourage them to be social with each other, not having more screen time, which is something that totally lines up with my beliefs and what's important for students is having that social time, that interaction face-to-face, because most of our human communication is not what the words are. It's, as you were saying, Mary, the tone, the body language, all of that. And that's, kids are missing out on that, because for the most part, you know, when they go home, even when they're not in school, they are spending the majority of their time on some sort of device instead of interacting face-to-face with other people.
Corey, do you have any thoughts on this? I have a ton of thoughts on it.
I do. I have a lot of thoughts, too. Really good questions and conversations. So when we talk about the short attention span, right, it's not just at home, it's at school, too. So what my daughter finds is when a teacher is showing a video or she's doing her lesson, and they watch that and they listen to it, but even when the teacher asks a question, they're impatient. They're like, what is the actual question? Stop beating around the bush. Just ask me. So they're impatient, you know, there, too. And in regards to interaction and that social aspect, I don't think it's just their friends. That's very important. But I also think with the short attention span, it's important to have that interaction with a teacher, too. So watching a video during their classroom or a lecture where you have the one-way communication where the teacher is talking to the kids, with the key of engagement, what I'm seeing, Monica, I'd love to hear if you see this too, is the interaction where they're doing simulations and they're acting out the characters in their books, and they're having these debates, and I think they love it. And I think that watching a really long video, a really long lecture, like, they just lose their attention, and so they're not retaining that information. And so I think people are getting more and more creative with education.
Yeah, we've had to. And you know, this is a very poignant conversation to be having because of the attention spans, and we have to meet them where they are. So the other thing besides encouraging those conversations, having students constantly do what I call parent share or group talks. My class is organized into groups always. They're in little groups, and that it is always collaborative. That, you know, they know that this is, we're all working together to learn and help each other, not islands, working and learning independently. And that's a huge part of what works in you know, my experience. And so it gives them the opportunity to have conversations with each other, directed a little bit during the class time, for sure. But then when they have their own time, just to be able to engage with each other. And the other thing that I find extremely important for them is to give them extra time to be outside and to interact with each other outside and play games, just naturally occurring games with each other. I'm having my entire class, every student will get together when I take them out, and they will play a tag game, the whole class. And that's organic. I don't direct them to do it. They just choose to do that, which is amazing.
Listeners, I think the one thing you should know about Miss Monica McLeod is that she is an award-winning teacher. She has worked with students, moved them through the tests. She's taken them from 0 to 100. So when Monica is starting to give you these tips and hints, I urge you to listen, because she knows what she's doing. The one thing, Monica, I would really like to talk to you about is failure. We have avoided failure in the classroom from some time, and I believe from a psychological perspective, failure is a wonderful opportunity to learn. I know we didn't do it with millennials, but what do you think about introducing it to Gen Z?
It's a huge part of our conversations on a weekly, if not daily, basis, that mistakes are part of life. It's not something to try to avoid. It's not something to be embarrassed about. It is part of being a human being. You're never going to be perfect. You're never going to get it right all the time, every time, and that's okay. And teaching them to have that resilience, that because when we are constantly bailing young people out and solving problems for them, giving them too much direction and not letting them sit and puzzle and work things out for themselves, even when it's, you know, frustrating and difficult and challenging, it's really important that they go through that, because otherwise when they do face big challenges, because life is full of challenges, they are not having the resilience and the experience of having struggled and having failed, but picked themselves back up and continued. And that's a very, very important part of being a human being, is to have that resilience. And a lot of people today just don't have it.
Agreed. And that's why we're seeing such high depression rates. But let's get back into that. Corey, I have a really interesting question, and please let us know if you feel comfortable answering this. But here's the first question I just received, which is, how can parents effectively navigate the digital landscape to ensure a healthy balance for their Gen Z children? And I would love you to talk about this, especially in light of what we talked about yesterday.
I love this question, right? How do you have that healthy balance, especially because you know, they're on their Chromebooks or their notebooks all day at school, and the first thing that they want to do when they come home is be on TikTok or whatever their entertainment is. So it is important to have that balance. When my daughter comes home from school, instead of having this long conversation about her day was, I'm like, just give me the speed story. Give me the bullets, the highlights of your day, and we have that conversation. And then she has the choice of whether she wants to talk about it more or whether she needs to go and decompress. And so what does that mean for Gen Z to decompress? Is it to sit in their room and think about their day, to process? And Monica, kind of to your point, like, it's so important for the kids to have time to process and retain and reflect on their day. I think a hard part about how we perceive how we relax is by going on our devices, right? Going on TikTok or that type of entertainment. So, you know, do we kind of force the kids to stray away from that, or do we allow them to have that time to decompress with that type of entertainment? Entertainment forms have changed over the years. So it is definitely a hard balance. And I do think that it's different based on the Gen Zer, right? I think parents have to make that decision, and it's not easy.
No, I just think that that definitely has to have a balance. And if part of that balance is just creating a schedule where, you know, you have you know, half an hour where you could go and decompress on a device or watching a favorite show or something like that. But then after that, it's going to be, you know, doing something outside, if that's possible, or if it's possible, playing a game as a family, like, you know, get out those board games, dust them off. There's a lot of important conversations and learning how to interact with other human beings that comes from playing games and having those conversations as a family with each other, and being away from the technology for, you know, a break in that way as well, because it is very mentally stimulating, a lot of the things that young people are doing on their devices, and it's also once they get to a certain age, detrimental as far as their mental health, because then you get into a lot of bullying, etc., on the devices, on the social media platforms, which are really having a huge impact on young people today.
Monica, I can't believe you said that. Rich, why don't you give the number? And then, Monica, we just got a question for you on cyberbullying. So, Rich, do you want to give everybody a number in case some people are missing it and want to get in on this conversation?
Yes. Please join this awesome conversation. You can text us or call us at 773-763-9278. I'll say it one more time, 773-763-9278. We'd love to hear your voices and your thoughts.
So here I have two questions for Ms. McLeod, and I have two questions for Corey. Ms. McLeod, how can teachers address issues like cyberbullying and online safety while promoting responsible digital citizenship among Gen Z? Sorry, it was really small and I can't find my glasses.
It's something that is a constant struggle. Because when they are on the social media platforms, they feel pretty invincible, because they're so removed. You know, they don't have to look at the person that they're about to malign. So that's, well, it's a huge issue and a huge challenge. One thing that I do, and, you know, not everybody might agree with this, but if I have students who are, for example, rude to a guest teacher that, you know, if I'm away, they have to write apology letters explaining what they did, what they should have done, and what can be expected in the future. And then if that person then would be back in school another time, I do have them have a conversation with them and students who are having conflict with each other. I have them have mending conversations where they each get to say how they're feeling and how what's happened is affecting them or did affect them, and then work together to come up with a solution. So the one person gets to say what they need from the other person, and then they switch roles so that they each have an opportunity. It's a safe environment. I'm there just as the mediator to let them know that, you know, they can safely share what they need to. And it's remarkably effective. I've never had a mend conversation not have a positive outcome where each individual feels much more positive and happy after the conversation. And when it's online, it's very much, in spite of the fact that, you know, somebody can respond, it is very much more a feeling of a one-sided conversation, even though the other person can respond.
Yeah, sorry, I love that. That's okay. I love that. Mend conversations. I think that's an incredibly important aspect. Before I go to the next question from Monica, Corey, I have a question for you. It's, please feel, if you don't want to answer it, don't answer it. But the question is, I sometimes feel afraid for the world that Gen Z is growing up in. How do you deal with your personal feels as a parent, if you have them?
So are you asking, like, kind of in the context of, you know, how do I protect them or guard them or kind of, like, control their environment? So just a little bit curious more about your question.
Well, it's not my question, Corey. So, listener, if you want to text in more clarity for Corey, that would be great. But I imagine they're just talking about themselves instead of putting their worry on their kids. How can they pull back? Because at the top of the show, we did talk about the certainty generation and some of the fears they've faced.
Yeah. Well, I think if we talk about the context of cyberbullying and really kind of building up what Monica was saying, you know, it's, I wonder if they are looking at their social media and they're getting feedback or some really mean comments from people, I half wonder, you know, how bad is it? But also at the same time, will it help them kind of build a thick skin? And that's so hard for me to even speak to because, right, because I think it's easy to say, you know, they need a thicker skin, right? Because, you know, Mary, like what you were saying before with gentle parenting, you know, I think they're very, very sensitive. And so I wonder if there are different ways that we can help them build a thicker skin. And kind of like what you were saying earlier, too, with how do we let them fail a little bit and how do we let them navigate? And as a parent, where do I set up those guardrails and those guidelines?
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things that we have to do, and as a society, I think we really have to start changing back this. First of all, bullying comes from the parents. So parents lay the groundwork for, if you have a child that's a bully, it's your issue. It's the whole mammalian brain, plant corn, you get corn. And we have to start calling out the parents on this too, and with young children when bullying starts. And there's, I mean, this is, Dr. Coloroso wrote about this years and years ago. But the other thing is, when we start establishing guardrails, it's got to be for every action, there's a reaction. And you know that from the internet. Like, they can see that from the internet. They're trained to understand that. But when we don't have a reaction that aligns with their expectations, that's when we have to start giving them other coping skills. And that's what you're talking about. It's not necessarily a thick skin. It's other skills. Now, here's a really interesting question on that topic for both you and Monica. Thank you, listener. I love this question. How can parents and teachers collaborate to support the social and emotional development of Gen Z children and teenagers in a world where support is often necessary? I think,
There's no easy answer to that question. I love it, though. It's a great question.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I know, you know, as a teacher, I always want to have, the parent share with me any information that would help me to understand their child as a human being, to know, if their child has had, if their child has anxiety or, if they've had some kind of experience or something happened I need to know about, because it would help me to be sensitive to whatever those needs might be. For example, I had a parent let me know that a pet, I think it was a baby goat that, the children had been taking care of on their farm, died. And, my student came to school that morning after this had happened. And, of course, that was really important for me to know so that I could pay a little bit more attention to that student and to see how they were feeling during the day, reading their facial expression, body language, to know if, they needed a little bit more TLC or if they were handling it okay. But I really do feel that, it's important to have young as possible, have children have the opportunity to have those bumps and scrapes and challenges, and give them the time to figure it out for themselves. Don't just leap in right away to try to solve it for them. Ask them what they think. And, if they don't have the tools, the vocabulary, help them with that. Say, that sounds like you're feeling, really angry or really upset, but let them try to work out what they should do, because when they become adults, we can't, as adults, we can't react in some of the ways that kids might feel like they'd like to react, because we have to be respectful and work with the other human beings in our life without resorting to, for example, calling them names or trying to belittle someone. That's just not how you behave as an adult, and they need to start learning those skills, from an early age.
I agree, but I love the idea of the parent and you being in constant conversation, because when we started this, we talked about their need for instant feedback. And I think that parents are really beginning to understand that they need instant feedback. But now if we insert instant feedback together in our conversations, it would be wonderful. I mean, I never get to talk about I would never talk to a parent in a million years. But I don't think that that's what's important here. I love what you just said, the idea of feedback, and maybe we can make it instant. Now, I'd like to pull Richardson back into the show. Rich, I think you have a little quiz for us today. And so, ladies, I think we're going to check a few things out. We're going to see how Gen Z we actually are.
All right, this is a fun quiz. All right, so let me start off. How often do you check your smartphone in a day? A, less than 10 times. B, around 10 to 20 times. Or C, more than 20 times?
More than 20. Yeah, I agree.
I would definitely agree.
I'm with you on that one, too.
Okay, so all of us pick C. Got it. I'm writing this down.
Question two. Which social media platform do you use the most? A, TikTok. B, Instagram. C, Snapchat. Or D, none. I don't use social media at all.
None.
Okay.
I don't use any of those either. I'm not there.
For me,
I tried
it's only
Instagram.
TikTok.
Are you a TikTok girl?
I am, and it just blows my mind. It really does. And I thought it was so interesting that my daughter said, "Oh, Mom, TikTok is for teenagers. It's for kids." And I was like,
No, it's not. The amount mm-hmm. of educational and informational and collaboration that's available on TikTok blows my mind.
Yeah, I use TikTok a lot too, and I agree with you. Like, I see, even taking on the train, I see a lot of people using TikTok. Doesn't really matter the age, there's so much information there. Okay, third question.
That, sorry to interrupt, Richard. That's what I was just going to say, that as an individual, I feel both in my personal life and in my professional life overwhelmed by the amount of information that's available. It's becoming overwhelming. It's this huge, huge umbrella of information over my head, and sometimes I feel very overwhelmed by it all. And so that's why I make a conscious choice to not look at certain things or use certain social media, because I just find it too overwhelming.
I think it's so important that you say that, because seeing that it's so overwhelming, we also have to be very cautious that everything we see isn't necessarily true, right? So we have to make some judgment calls there and make sure we're checking our facts too.
Oh, yes.
It's tiring too, actually.
Well, about checking facts, can I just throw something in here? Now you're going to see what a professor I am. I used to get papers from students that with all this made-up stuff. Like, all of us know when we're reading BS. We have a really good BS meter. But now, the way that some of these people are, maybe they're using AI or something like that, you have to really look at what they're doing. So what I do as a professor is I put what the students say is their references in Google, and I say, find me these articles. And 9 out of 10 times, it's just made up. And so when you do your grad school or dissertation or something, there's actually someone who checks your dissertation's references. And when you write a book, they check your references. So people need to know, we're going to check your facts, but we're not doing that anywhere. Like, we have Yahoo's writing crap, like, drink 7 gallons of water a day and you'll lose 4 pounds. No, your heart will stop. Hello? Like, think about this stuff. But people have no common sense. And I think it's all because of TikTok, Instagram, and Snapchat. They all want to think for you. I hate social media. I agree with Florida that we should not let children on social media at all. And I think a child is anyone under 18. And, you know, text to voice. But don't go on with these loons that are out there. And then how they make money is they give you this feed that believes, like, if you are into, say, for example, God forbid, suicide ideation, you get tons of stuff on suicide ideation.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Mary, I want to comment on what you said about AI, because I think you're right. I think students are using AI itself to write their papers. But what I'm also hearing is, the teachers are using AI to see if the paper was AI generated. I thought that was very interesting.
Yep. And there's all kinds of other
teachers are using AI as a tool as well. And I have used it. I find it remarkable, but also, once again, a little bit scary. Because is the artificial intelligent computer program, it has access, as my brain does not, to vast amounts of information, but is it fact-checking all that information? Is it able to discern between the difference between something that is actually a fact and something that is just an opinion? Because there's so much information out there that it could just be something someone made up. And I don't know enough about the AI to know, are they capable of discerning the difference between, you know, something that somebody has posted but is not correct? Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I was going to say I have no idea. Thank you, Corey. Thank you for telling us. I had no idea.
I mean, AI is just out there, you know, scraping all kinds of information from websites or whatever kind of resources there are, databases, whatever. And so absolutely, there is no way to tell what is fact and what is opinion, and that's why AI can be so scary, right?
Yeah.
That's something to really think about for sure. I have three more questions, and let's see what happens.
Okay.
So, what's your preferred method of communication? Texting, B, video calls, C, voice messages, or D, emailing?
Oh, it depends on why I need to get in touch with the person. For work, it's primarily I will either walk into that room and talk to the person, or if it's, you know, going to be a faster time saving, it's email. And at home, it depends on if the person is close enough to me that I could just, you know, walk to their house or call. I'm going to do that. But if they're far away, like to keep in touch with my family in Toronto, I will often just send a text.
Okay. Yeah, I'd go with A too, to be honest. Or B. What about you, Dr. Mary?
I have the data on it, so it's hard for me to... But definitely, I'm with Monica 100%. Like, I have the same answer as Monica. I definitely walk. There's one other thing we didn't put on there, Rich, that I would recommend for next time, but I'll talk about it after Corey gives her answer.
So for
me personally, it's text, right? It's quick, it's back and forth, it's, you know, typically informal. But I think in a conversation that I had recently, it's one thing that what's your preference, right? But what also is the most effective? So what are you looking for, right? Your preference or what's most effective, which is always going to be your in-person, your face-to-face conversation. So yeah, it's interesting what people's preferences versus what's most effective.
It's interesting you say that because that's what the whole book is on, Message Received, is how to use each method, each of these effectively, and which generation appreciates what. And it just came out here, which was kind of funny. But also the thing that we're not talking about is voice texting. So I don't know how you do it on other phones, but if you have an Apple phone, you can actually do a quick voice message. And sometimes they're the best because at least someone can hear the tone in your voice. And when we were talking yesterday, and I hope you don't mind if I share this, like we were talking about Corey texting and how people text like specifically with capital letters or without periods, and how that's taken very differently from one generation to the next. And so a voice text might solve that problem.
I wonder, Mary, why that's not more popular, right? Because with Gen Z creating this very innovative and creative way to setting tone in a text message, because you can't hear their voice, in order to establish, you know, that tone, why don't they use the voice messaging more often? Because it does take a lot of time for the right, form of text message. So why don't they just do a voice? It's faster.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Okay, Rich, what's our next question?
Awesome. When do you usually go to bed on a weekday? A, before 10 p.m., B, around 10 to 11 p.m., or C, after 11 p.m.?
Seriously? Well, all the listeners know me. I don't know that I've ever seen 10 p.m., so A.
Yeah. For me, it's 10, but I don't even always make it to 10. Yeah, 10. I hardly ever stay up past 10.
Is that 10 for everyone?
The older I get, it's more before 10. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Richardson?
Oh, I'm probably after B. around 10, 11, sometimes see after 11 p.m.
Yeah, there we go.
That's not too bad.
But, you have to call me out,
you know,
huh?
Richard, I'm going to just speak for myself and say, you know, I'm getting older, and I find for myself, I just do better sticking to a very predictable sleep pattern. I go to bed at the same time and I get up at the same time.
Funny you should mention that, Monica. Mm-hmm. Everybody does. Those are the guardrails for parenting. And I don't think we're going to have time to talk about it. I think we all need to get together again. But when you set a structure for your children, it helps them for the rest of their lives. Like, you go to bed at this time, you eat at this time, and it sounds ridiculous, but those guardrails are so necessary in life. And if you look at how the internet works, it works through logic. And that's why they crave logic and certainty so much. That's the reason. So anything you can do for yourself, anything you can do for them. And the last secret of the world is make sure you put water on your feet before you go to bed, whether it's just a hot cloth, whether it's soaking your feet. Water naturally calms down the high dopamine you have, because as Corey said earlier, we're using our devices to entertain ourselves, whether it's a TV or a movie. If you can teach your children about just soaking their feet or taking a shower or whatever before they go to bed, guarantee you they will have a better night's sleep, because it's introducing different chemicals into the brain that allows the brain to relax.
Wow, thanks for sharing that, Mary, because I did not know that. So that's awesome.
That's a great tip.
Yeah, seriously. One more question. This is the last one.
Okay, we're ready. It's okay. We're getting lots of conversations from this.
How do you prefer to consume content? A, short videos. B, podcasts. C, articles. Or D, infographics?
Once again, it really depends on what it is, because I actually enjoy all of those, but it depends on what I am looking at and why. So what am I trying to get out of it? Yeah, that's a tough one. I can't pick one or the other.
Okay, if I had to pick one, I would say podcasts. Just because they entertain me, but I probably, given what I do for a living, should say articles, short videos, then infographics, then podcasts. I really do like a good infographic, though. Really a big fan of infographics.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I do still prefer not to read online. If I can have something, a hard copy of something, I still prefer not to read online. Yeah. I find it very easy online to get distracted, right? Because there's all the links and you can just go down a rabbit hole. But if I just have the actual printed copy of something, then I'm, you know, forced to stay focused on just that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Corey, what about you?
Well, sometimes I wonder if I'm a little bit confused. Am I a Gen X or a Gen Z? Because my attention span is so small right now. I want the short video. Let's get to the point. Let's get, you know, I want the information I want really fast. So
I'm with you.
I like a good short video. Don't get me wrong. I mean, of course, I tried that for cooking and, you know, I failed miserably, because then I just went on to something else. It's just not for me. It's not for me. I know that we only have about 3 more minutes left, but Rich, why don't we do this? Why don't we post this quiz on the Digital Wellness LinkedIn site or Instagram or whatever, and post the whole thing and the score points. It looks to me like we're between tech-savvy trendsetters and social media enthusiasts when we add up our scores on this one.
So, and the one more thing that I'd just like to say, as I feel it's really important for parents who are interested in keeping their children or young adults as well as possible in their use of social media is to have limits to the use of devices, I think, for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is safety, to have those devices. And I know this is a real challenge because, you know, most young people have phones, which that's their way of communicating with their friends. But I think at certain appropriate, age-appropriate times, those need to be shut down and that communication streams shut down for the night. Like, I stop looking at my phone usually at 9 o'clock. That's it. I don't read it. I don't check anything. That's it. 9 o'clock is done.
Couldn't agree. Do any of you put your phones downstairs and go upstairs to sleep? Or, you know, in another room to sleep?
I used to do that religiously until I got fed up having problems with my alarm clock, which was like a plug-in alarm clock. So now I use my phone as my alarm, and so it is sitting face down on my bedside table, which is not ideal, but I don't pick it up and look at it or do anything. It's just my alarm at night.
You have very good self-discipline. Yeah. How about you, Corey?
I love my phone as the alarm. It works best than the old school alarm clocks, right? But there's also a sleep mode, right, where you can set it so you can't get the notifications or the calls after a certain amount of time. So there's a lot of flexibility with the settings there, but I definitely love it for my alarm. And even my daughter uses it for her alarm as well. So got to kind of set those guidelines with those settings as well.
Mm-hmm. Ladies, I'm going to ask you and Richardson for your last thoughts before we close, but I'd like to invite you back because we didn't even get into the joys and challenges of working with Gen Zs or any of those wonderful things. Like, wow, we have a lot to say on this topic, and I'm really glad because this generation really needs this conversation. All of us do. So, Corey, why don't we start with you? Final thoughts. Final thoughts on Gen Z and parenting.
I just loved the conversation, right? Because I agree with you, Mary. I think that parents and teachers and others really need to understand Gen Z better as they start to enter the workforce. And so I'm thirsty for it. And I think others are too. So I loved the conversation and I'm so happy they had me today.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. We hope you'll come back, Corey.
Thank you.
Monica?
Same. I think it's so important that, you know, having that balance of supporting young people and their use of social media and devices and AI while at the same time encouraging them to be okay with not getting things right all the time, making mistakes, you know, accepting the consequences of those mistakes and then moving forward and being able to have that resilience. It's so important.
Resilience. I love that. I also love the failure aspect that we talked about earlier. Give people a chance to make a mistake. They're wonderful opportunities to learn. Gen Z Richardson, what are your thoughts on today's call?
I thought this was just a wealth of information. It was great conversation. I learned so much, and especially like giving people the opportunity to fail and understand that failure is not a bad thing. And also the guidelines and the safeguards with using our technology, as we've literally been used and grown up with this technology and trying to learn how to communicate with others better instead of wanting certain things really quickly. So I absolutely love this conversation.
Well, thank you so much. I learned a ton from everyone. I want to wish everybody a great week. I thank you for your questions. I'm sorry, I know we didn't get through to a few texts, but I know that we can entice people to come back to the show, so we will do that. We will get to those questions, and Rich and I will attempt to answer them on the Digital Wellness LinkedIn and Instagram sites. So everybody, I wish you a fabulous week. Monica, Corey, thank you for coming on. Rich, always a pleasure. Be well, everyone.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.